today in Rich in Relationship, we're going to talk about
the key challenges in determining a fair amount of child support or alimony.
One of the things I noticed early on was so often one spouse was being bullied, was being put down.
Dividing up the assets, it sounds so unemotional, and it's such an incredibly emotional process for so many people. And I've got some questions about what are some of the challenges that people come into when they start to look at what do we have and how are we going to divide it between us. Let's go to our guest expert, Bill Gentry. Bill, are you there?
I'm here, Rich, and so good to be with you again.
And it's great to see you again. Bill and I have known each other for a long time, and we've broken bread, and Bill knows so much. He's been doing this a while, but I'm going to let him tell you about that. Bill, how did your heart lead you to do this work?
Rich, a long time ago when I went to law school, and I've been practicing law for 37 years, and I've represented thousands of men and women in divorce cases and other family law cases. One of the things I noticed early on was so often one spouse was being bullied, was being put down, really undercut emotionally in helping these people get out from underneath the thumb of the other spouse has really been heartwarming because I was bullied some as a child and I didn't like it. And I don't like to see it happen to other people.
You know, bullying is one of my favorite topics. We're going to have to do a whole podcast about that. But today, we're in the middle of this workshop. So today we're talking about dividing up the assets. It sounds so unemotional, and it's such an incredibly emotional process for so many people. And I've got some questions about what are some of the challenges that people come into when they start to look at what do we have and how are we going to divide it between us. And the first question is, considering people's income, the need of the child, the financial situation of the family, what are the key challenges in determining a fair amount of child support or alimony? Or are those even concepts that are relevant?
They are very relevant, Rich. And one of the biggest issues we have, we represent a lot of doctors and lawyers and other people who are technically self-employed or small business people or the spouses of people in a situation like this. And it always becomes a little problematic because I've heard so many people over the years, oh, he's hiding money. And figuring out what true income is for purposes of calculating child support and so forth is one of the biggest issues. Then when you roll in there an issue like when we've had an economic downturn and folks are very upset because, wait a minute, I still need the same amount of money to raise the kids. And now he wants to pay me less because his business is not doing as well. You have children's changing needs as they get older. The children may, a 17-year-old child may need more than an 11-year-old child. Daycare could be a huge expense when a child is 2 years old, but not when they get to be six or seven and you're paying for after-school care. And then if you roll into it a situation where the children have special needs, that can be frightfully expensive. While there's certain federal programs that mandate local school districts do certain things, sometimes they don't. Sometimes a private school is a better option, but you're not getting all the services that way. These are all the things that come into play when you're trying to figure out where do we set child support to begin with.
It sounds complicated, and let's make it a little more complicated. I'm curious, how do some of these things that you just mentioned, income variations or the changes in the child's needs or getting remarried, create legal and financial challenges in adjusting child support or alimony along the way?
It's interesting because you mentioned remarriage, and one of the thorniest issues that I've seen in over the years is a couple gets married, they have a couple of kids, they get divorced, and then one or both of them remarry, and then they have more kids by their new spouses. Okay. And then the person who's paying alimony for the kids of the first marriage wants to go back to court and say, hey, I want to pay less because I've got a couple more kids. And the first spouse who's receiving the child support is, wait a minute, that's going to be really problematic. You knew you had these kids and now you're taking on more responsibilities. And I didn't have a say in that. So that often is a source of contention. But like we talked about a minute ago, as somebody's income goes up or down, whether it's the person paying child support or receiving child support, that can really be problematic because everybody wants a measure of predictability. But if this one spouse's income really takes off, the children of that marriage should be able to benefit some from that. Because if they were still together and still married, the children would be getting the benefit from all of that additional income.
All right. And here is the clincher, question number three. And I'm sure we've both seen this in many ways, shapes, and forms. What about when, for whatever reason, payments get inconsistent or just stop happening? Again, I say for whatever reason, because sometimes people just feel like they don't have the money. Sometimes they get pissed off and withhold the money. There's all kinds of reasons. What can be the impact on the mom or dad who are receiving the payments, and especially the kids? And how do you find your way through that mess?
It can be very problematic, and especially if you've got children in private school or you've got other ongoing regular payments that you have to come up with. If the payor spouse, often the husband, but not always, is late or paying less or paying nothing, that creates huge problems for the recipient of the child support, planning, and everything else. If health insurance is permitted to lapse, that can really be tough on the kids, especially if they happen to be special needs. So there are lots of ways we can go about doing it. But one of the things that I tell people is whether you're paying or receiving, the payments need to happen. Okay. And I know we're going to talk more tomorrow about the specific issues of what to do if these things are happening, but it's a really bad situation, both for the payor and the payee. It's obvious for the payee, the recipient of the child support, but it's bad for the payor if they start getting behind or, heaven forbid, stop altogether.
Yeah, I think in the long run, it's probably bad for everyone.
It is. Go ahead.
And let's just jump right back in. So what strategies can be employed to navigate the financial and even the emotional complexities? We're going to tap some of that later on today. But in your experience, what are the emotions that need to be addressed in determining the amounts, particularly the amounts around child support and alimony when those things are required?
Absolutely. So it is very important to have a trained legal professional that you're working with. One of the great virtues of having a lawyer is that it creates emotional distance between you and your emotions and the case. If you don't have that, it's really hard to be able to, because your spouse over the years, you know how to push each other's buttons. And unless you have someone who can distance you from that and do the clear thinking for you, it's going to be much more problematic. But in addition to the emotional, there's a lot of financial information that has to be exchanged between the two of you. We have something called a domestic relations financial affidavit, which I think just about every state has. And it's the disclosure of what your financial situation is. And it is what's used primarily to figure out what child support amount and alimony should be payable. Okay. What I tell folks is don't shoot too high with your number. Don't shoot too low with your number, because one way or the other, it's going to come and bite you on the rear end if you're not accurate in this domestic relations financial affidavit. And you want to make a full disclosure, okay? Because the last thing you want is for the other side to come back and say, hey, you hit something important, whether it's income or your expenses were too high and you weren't being factual and honest and open.
That makes a lot of sense. So this isn't like a typical negotiation where you might ask for the moon in order to get something in between. You really want to hang out in the ballpark that seems realistic because of how it's going to look to the court.
Maintaining credibility with the judge, always very important.
All right. Question number two. Yesterday, we were talking about those life changes, right? You have kids, you have an increase in income, you have a drop in income. Maybe you have an increase in, you're taking care of the kids and you got an increase in needs. They're going from public school to private school. Some kind of change is happening there. What are the best legal practices for adjusting these payments? And how do you deal with the feelings that are inevitably going to come up on both sides?
therapy is a huge thing that you can do both for yourself, for your kids, and for your case, for your lawyer. Because if the therapist is helping you deal with and process these emotions, then you're not using the lawyer's time to do that for you. So that's just one thing I always put out there for folks. If you get to the point where, for example, you're the one receiving child support, the other one's paying, the other one says, hey, I lost my job. Okay. They're not authorized to stop paying you child support. In most states, they have to continue paying and they have to continue paying the same amount. But you know what? Cut them a little slack. Okay. If they say, hey, can I pay 50, 60, 70% for a month or two or three? I'm inclined to tell you to say yes, provided the other side is an open book with what's going on in their lives. If they refuse to do that, then that's the wrong answer from them, and you should hold them accountable.
I like that. And that kind of leads into the next question, which is, you've got somebody who's, well, you're either the parent who's paying out and you can't for some reason, or you're the person you were just talking about. You're the person receiving and the person paying out can't. How can you work with them? What everybody wants to do is lock them up, because that'll get the money out of them, right? But realistically, how do you approach these situations? If you're the payor, how do you want to lay this out if you're having a change in circumstances? Or if you're the payee, you already gave us one window into what the payee can do. Let's say the payee does that and the payer isn't such an open book. What are your options?
It is very important. And I always tell my clients this, whether you're the payor who's getting behind or the payee who's upset that they're getting less or none, keep in mind how the judge is going to look at the situation, because the judge is a person just like the rest of us. The judge has to balance the payor versus the payee, what the payor can pay, what the payee really needs. Okay. So what I always, when I'm in court trying a case, as I tell the client, I'm always keeping one eye on the judge to see his or her reaction to the things that are going on. And what I tell people is, whether you're the payor or the payee, think about how the judge would process your reason for not paying or your reason for not agreeing to a somewhat reduced amount. Because if the judge doesn't respect you and your position because you've been unreasonably difficult, the judge is probably going to hit you pretty hard when it comes to either cutting you some slack on the payments or making the other side pay more. You don't want to have what the lawyers call unclean hands.
Yeah, yep. And makes a lot of sense, because the judge's focus, folks, is always going to be on the well-being of the children first. And there, if you're showing up in a way that signals to the judge that you're coming first, the response is going to be less than positive, is what Bill is saying. And we're going to explore that more in depth as we go through this workshop. Bill, how can people find you? Where do you practice? How can people find you? What's the best way to connect with you?
So I'm in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Our website is gentrylawfirmgeorgia.com. We've also written a book where I talk about the trials and tribulations that a lot of women married to narcissists have had. And if you Google, I want out, and I think we're going to have a pull down screen, yeah, you can get more about how to get our website, how to get a copy of the book, and how to talk with us further about your situation. Now, we are licensed in Georgia, so we'd be happy to talk with anyone in the state of Georgia who may have issues, questions, or concerns. But I will tell you that the book was written with an idea kind of non-specific to Georgia. So if you happen to be someone who has been married to a narcissist, I think the book would be a great resource for you.
I was going to say those Georgian narcissists probably aren't so different than the rest of the world, huh? You never know. Georgia's pretty special. Yeah. And so hit that link that should be on the screen. And by the way, there's a rumor that this book is a bestseller.
It is indeed. It came out last September and it's done surprisingly well. But we put a lot of love and attention into it because I've heard the same story from so many people. And it hurts when I hear the story, but honestly, it feels great when we're able to lift these folks out of the situation they're in and put them on the path to the better future that awaits them.
All right. We're going to give you all another opportunity to buy this book if you didn't catch the link. So pay attention. Bill, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Rich. A pleasure being with you.